Yeah, thanks very much, Tom, for this very warm welcome and also for the invitation to this up to now super interesting and exciting conference. And also very warm welcome, thanks to the House of Cultures for the support. We are now, sorry.
So, as you already can tell, we need to make this into a structure to keep in time. So I'm going to do the talking for the next 24 minutes.
And I do the performing.
So to give you a quick sense, can you turn out? Okay. To give you a quick sense of forms and aesthetics we use, I have some images in the background. It was from a kind of overview, not to call it retrospective, at the Photo Gallery in Wien, a small independent art space that was in the last fall. Okay. As you can see, it's mostly photography that has shaped our body of works. Various forms and formats, ranging from photography transferred into large-scale wallpapers to conventionally framed photograms, show how we understand the potential of photography in relation to the representation and imagination of space, architecture, urbanism, and modernity. Over the last years, our research has focused increasingly on spaces of knowledge, be it architectural, social, or educational spaces, built, imagined, or ephemeral. With the title Educational Modernism, we look at contested histories and the role of university architectures within a shift from modernism to neoliberalism. We realized, for example, works about the IIT, Illinois Institute of Technology, which was entitled Bronzeville, and the IIT by Mies van der Rohe, which you probably know, represents this European icon of modernism in North America. Through a series of solarized photographs, we related the campus to its hidden racist history and the displacement of black communities in Chicago. We found a poem from 1968 by black writer Gwendolyn Brooks, where she relates light to corruption and brings the black history of the very space on which the Crown Hall, the main building of the IIT, was built on. So we kind of thought about it, of bringing it to light. And I want to refer also to what Elke Beyer talked today about this layered history, that it's also about that antagonisms and violence has to be need to be written into these layered histories. So here you see a smaller version of a wallpaper entitled From Our House to Bauhaus, which connects Tom Wolfe's book From Bauhaus to Our House, which is a cynical tirade about modernism. And it relates to the New York University's housing complex, the Silver Towers, in Manhattan by architect I.M. Pei. We used the layout of the publication as a background structure and replaced Wolfe's argument against international style modernism with our photographs of the buildings, of their daily use, and its location to Lower Manhattan.
Doesn't show up on the background.
Oh, you can't see the photos. Oops.
No, we have a small issue.
Oh, sorry, they were all photographs. Excuse us.
At least it's good to have two people performing. One, after a time, you recognize something is maybe.
I would not have noticed, yes. Sorry. Okay. Okay, so let's see what you have not seen. This is the project I talk about, entitled Bronzeville, about the displacement of the black community at the very site where the Crown Hall and the IIT was built, where Gwendolyn Brooks wrote this poem about, in a book called The Mecca. And so this is the wallpaper about I.M. Pei's Silver Towers, structured through the layout of Tom Wolfe's book, From Bauhaus to Our House. And so this is a detail of it, and we realized this project for the Austrian Cultural Forum in New York. And we understood it as a work, the work as a supportive statement. It was at the time when local inhabitants and activists used and appropriated the spacious modernist concepts of solid and voids as a counter-argument in their struggle against NYU's plan to fill the voids with new additional building, which was going on right at that time when we realized this work. The use of wallpaper as spatial elements which inscribe new spaces into existing ones draws from the understanding that Henri Lefebvre calls the production of space, that space is never given, but produced by the social interaction of its users and the possibilities of making spaces within and through their everyday, sometimes even radical, practices. But now we turn to our main topic of these two Canadian universities. Simon Fraser University, here above, with the so-called AQ academic quadrangle, and then the University of Lethbridge. They both were talked about new or instant universities built quickly in the 60s and early 70s in Western Canada, at the very moment in Canadian history when education became a national effort to focus more on the shift towards knowledge-based economies, new technologies, etc., and that in a country which is very much driven by resource extraction. Here you see the University of Lethbridge, which opened in 1971 in the province of Alberta. Both campuses are built by Canadian architect Arsa Erickson. Simon Fraser, actually, he built in collaboration with Geoffrey Massey. SFU opened in 65 and is located on top of Burnaby Mountain near Vancouver with a spectacular set of concrete buildings which frame the view onto the North Shore Mountains and where I also work since 2007. The campus is often used in movies as a hidden place for like a deep state or corrupt governmental offices or secret laboratories, for example, the X-Files, or this great 70s film, Ground Star Conspiracy. All these were filmed here. This is a shot from a series which was called Underworld Awakening. So it's always the really bad guys who inhabit our campus. In 2010, we realized the installation, The University Paradox. The works made a link between then recent student protest, actually 2009 was it mostly, in Vienna and Vancouver, as well as historic protests at SFU. Famously known as the Uni Brand Movement, when the protests started at the Academy of Fine Arts in Vienna, were continued by an occupation of the main lecture hall at the University of Vienna and spread out by acts of solidarity to universities all over Europe and also to North America. And here's a photo of SFU. And as you probably remember, most of the demands or issues was it was against the Bologna reform, against standardizing attempts in curricula, limited access to universities for foreign students, the more general ask for freedom of education versus education as training on the job, etc. But also in North America, tuition hike, and. This is a source photo for our installation. It was this beautiful, almost like utopian looking image of a protest in 1967. And it's from SFU's Peak Archive. Peak is the magazine of the student union. Our intention was to question the myth of the radical history of the campus, which was very much created by a book by Hugh Johnson's called A Radical Campus, Making Simon Fraser University, which was published in 2005 to commemorate the 40th anniversary of BC's Instant University. But the whole anniversary seemed more a celebratory cultural event. You know, sometimes people were dressed up in hippie clothes to celebrate the 60s or 70s. But the whole anniversary did not take the opportunity to face the university's own history with all its conflicts and problems. But we'll come back to this book again. The installation consisted of a wallpaper based on the archival image, but then people were cut out of the photo and put onto separate panels on a different wall. We wanted to propose a space between the architecture, which, as you can see in the back, could be really from the present because it still looks exactly the same today, and the historic event as a potential to be filled with the contemporary presence of the people walking through and walking by. And then we also found in the SFU archive a similar event of a student protest in 68, but this was from a very different perspective. This photo was part of a series taken so that the university administration could document and take stock of the damage to and use of the spaces during the occupation of the university's administration building. At 3 in the morning, 100 police kicked everybody out, and the photographic evidence of this protest looks like this. These photos in the file folder next to the Peak archive show so clearly what Alan Sekula, when he talks about what he says, that archives are never neutral and that they don't only, it's not only about owning the photograph, but also owning the power or the capacity to interpret or create meaning of those events shown in the photograph. Fascinated by this find in the archive, we also noticed that the archival system was very loose and partially filled with question marks, things crossed out, or notes saying negative missing, etc. We also noticed that almost in all images there was a text visible. So we created a series of, you know, produced documents, and they were entitled Events Are Always Original. We took those excerpts of text as captions in order to reframe their function as evidence or crime photo. So here you can see on the blackboard, it says, General Meeting 9:15, Back to Power Politics Like Good Revolutionaries. And here we can read, We Love People, drawn onto the floor, but still photographed as like a tattooed crime scene. And here we read the complete poems and selected letters and prose of Hart Crane and the magazine, The Peak, with its title, Administration Occupied. A further series brought together different locations and times with slogans and posters and banners, the work Super Students, which is also referenced to Super Studio, updated historic moments of conflict through linking and articulating the various geographically localized demands of students using the examples of Vancouver and Vienna. The architecture of SFU and the University of Vienna are sketched out to place the students' demonstration in the foreground in order to portray the debate as an international matter of both historically and currently. Super Students 1 has the title, The Board's Action Showed More Concern About Our Image Than the Rights and Academic Freedom on Which This University Was Found. That was from the speech of Student Society President Stan Wong in 67. And then in the same space, exactly the same location, but 42 years later, Super Students number 2, Public Education is the Best Economic Recovery Tool, from 2009. Seems like a very modest request at that time. And then at the very same year, but in Vienna, Super Students 3, Schluss mit Ertragen, organisiert euch, Wien 2009, Enough with Suffering, Get Organized. And in Vienna, clearly it was a much stronger language was used than in Vancouver, for example. So if these projects considered much the photographic representation of protests or events, and how they are ideologically based and how they circulate, etc., in our recent projects, we focus on how architecture itself, the campus and its buildings, can be seen as an archive of social forces, materialized and brought into form, to paraphrase E.L. Weitzmann's proposal that architecture is a political plastic, social forces slowing into form. We ask how architecture was informed by new and progressive spatial ideas, but we also question how radical or at least progressive pedagogy has produced spaces and hopefully still can produce spaces. So this is again an archival photograph of the University of Lethbridge. With the title Performing Archives of Learning, it's our recent project at the University of Lethbridge, where we started researching 2 years ago about Ericsson's stunning university architecture. It's located in the so-called Coulees, a glacier-formed valley of the Old Man River, a spectacular site in the plains or prairies of southern Alberta, about 2 hours from Calgary. Due to the unique landscape and climate, Ericsson planned the building as a 1,000 feet, which is about 300 meters, long-stretched multi-storage bar, a kind of megastructure, which included all functions of a university campus, ranging from teaching and lecture hall, office spaces, laboratories, the main floor with food court, and architectural at that time, very unique, student housing in the same building, and that was on the ground level. The brutalist architecture represented the futuristic and promising new educational environment of a university where teaching, learning, and living became interrelated and mingled. Visiting the archive, we were given an amazing range of historic materials, plans, photographs, films, other documents, about the planning, realization, and the first years of life on campus. Here's an early sketch of the large public spaces within the campus, where Ericsson pointed out repeatedly that this public space is necessary to foster and enable interdisciplinary communication and exchange, a mandate of the new university in Canada, but also very much of the new projects in the 67th, which we heard yesterday about. This is an archival photograph of the seating situation in the public hall, which spans the whole length of the building. In his text, Universities, the New Visual Environment from 69, Ericsson refers to his visit of Al-Azhar Mosque and University in Cairo as a big source of influence for his spatial planning. He talked about as a place where people are eating, sleeping, just hanging out, joining in, listening to teaching or learning. So it's a very open, used space. And amongst the very vast range of historic material, we came across this one image. And it was soon entitled the Public Seminar. This is the second photo. But then it's the very same from the very same seminar, if it was a seminar at all. Nobody from the archive or students or faculty at that time could really give us a clear idea how those spaces functioned. Rumor says that seminars were held, but professors found it too distracting and moved very quickly back to enclosed spaces. So these two photos seem to show. Actually, we tried to find the people in the photograph, so there was quite a few university administrators sitting there and talking, and also maybe politicians. So this September, we worked with students to restage and perform a public seminar on the topic of how to bring the archive into the present, and how the idea of live and work and learn from then changed to now. We found some leftover benches from the original public seminar and reinstalled them almost original placement in the long hall. And also after yesterday, we thought that maybe stepped benches are the true international signifier for pedagogical ideas at that time, as we have seen quite a few variations yesterday. As a key object and entry into the history, we realized two woven curtains based on the found black and white image. Using the technique of Jacquard weaving, the image became a framing device for the spatial setting of the performance. It also became a starting object and vehicle for multiple references and debates. A Jacquard weaving carries at once a positive and its negative image. It collapses what we know from analog photography as negative film strip and a positive print from that. So the means of positive and negative will become an aesthetic device for the production of the video. So this is just the very first clip from the material we have. But we will use the positive and negative as an aesthetic means for the production. This is also just an image from another sequence, because as I said, we just started to work on the material. With yoga mats as props, students were watching archival material on their different devices, which on cell phone, on iPads, and on small computers, iBooks and things. We discussed and performed also the move from the premises of lifelong learning to always working by addressing the neoliberal paradigm of always learning and working, so there is no leisure and no outside anymore. And just a quick mention that the essay on lifelong learning and the professionalized learner by Annette de Kraus was actually a really wonderful research for lively debates. As last example of how to bring history into the present, writings by Erikson and also comments from the 1964 Banff Conference became the source of students performing this one sequence entitled I Am the University. So students were reading quotes like, I am the new visual environment. They were holding up archival drawings and plans about the design of the university. As the student incorporates the university, and the university would be speaking itself. One other quote of a student speaking, I differ in organization, purpose, and method from place to place, and my physical form is a direct outcome of my educational point of view and my needs. Or, I am in many ways like a city. I'm not any longer an ivory tower retreat. Looking back in the 60s and 70s, it became obvious that the concept of the new universities then were driven by a dominant white settler colonialism. Discussions with students, faculty, and cultural workers in Lethbridge made very clear that another political approach as university policy needs to be at the forefront of future debates. The logo left here is the official logo of Canada's 150th anniversary a couple years ago, which sparked, of course, big controversies, and the right logo was one of the many responses. And since a few years, one of the mandates, the official mandate of the university, is to indigenize the university. It's actually a really fantastic moment right now in Canada's presence during this time of recentering of indigenous ways of knowing and learning. And this brings us to our ongoing work at SFU in Vancouver again, where we received a SHRC research grant, Social Science Canada research grant, to produce the work Performing Spaces of Radical Pedagogies. In partnership with June Scudeler, who is a two-spirited Métis scholar and young professor in the Department of First Nations Studies and the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies at SFU, we will work on performative setting of a truly contemporary radical pedagogy. June's research explores the intersection between queer indigeneity and literature, art, film, and performance. In the academic context, she is keenly interested in how indigenous pedagogies can function in the classroom and beyond, a process which she calls the kitchen table pedagogy. We could summarize those attempts all under the term indigenization, which the university loves to put in every policy paper and branding slogan, but indigenization became because it became a key mandate. But what this policy really means, there is a different understanding, and many indigenous folks demand a clearer declaration of this term. Adam Godrey and Daniel Lawrence differentiate in their text indigenization as inclusion, reconciliation, and decolonization, navigating the different visions for indigenizing the Canadian university, Canadian academy, sorry. They laid this out clearly, that it's necessary that indigenization has to transform the institution. They call it resurgence-based decolonial indigenization, or the recentering of indigenous knowledges based on non-hierarchical structures. This new pedagogical model, of course, asks also then for spatial consequences, and yet we are based in a modernist structure. So as a first step, we will again think about how to identify spaces at the campus which still holds the legacy of former radical architectural spatial approaches for these performative pedagogical settings. We have not found yet a situation like we found in Lethbridge at the public seminar with the benches. So, but there are probably very similar ideas from Erikson about the interdisciplinary approach and the approach and the very public space, how he understands, mostly in the academic quadrangle. So the result of this project is very open, and we're just at the beginning of discussions which spatial and political outcomes, to speak in university language, we can imagine. We end with the cover of Hugh Johnson's Radical Campus. In 2013, Diana Reeder and Michelle Pitchen, colleagues of Chern Scudela, stated in their short report about enhancing Aboriginal graduate students' experience, a journey through the past and present towards an empowered future at SFU, and pointed out that, quote, Indigenous presence is of little concern of the official history of SFU as recorded in Radical Campus in its 382 pages, quote, while the word native is used four times, all to reference settler Canadians, and the word Indian is used twice to refer to Indian River and the Indian state of Kerala, there is no use of the words First Nations or Aboriginal. There is no mention of local First Nations communities or Aboriginal faculty, students, curriculum content, concerns, histories, stories, languages, protocols, ceremonies, concepts, or epistemologies. All things Indigenous are absent. So this offensive writing out of Indigenous presence is shocking. And even though the awareness has very much increased over the last years, this absence will be at the core of our work on performing spaces of radical pedagogies. Thank you. Thank you.